This is a Pinball News production.
Thanks, everybody. We're glad to have you back again this year. For who was here last year for our speech? And who has seen the new core unit? And who has no idea what new core is? Okay, we got one guy. That's pretty good, too. Well, first of all, things have changed just slightly since we saw you first last year. When we left our seminar last year, we had explained that we were finishing up NewCore currently and that we were working out licensing issues. And currently, at the time, we were working with Gene Cunningham, who owned one of the patents to the machine. Our plan was, and we were told by his lawyer and some other lawyers, that under Gene's patent, we'd be safe to produce NewCore and wouldn't have any issues. Well, Larry DeMar, being the smart person he is, pulled us aside afterwards and said, I think you guys are going to have a problem. And he was right. He was exactly right. And the problem ended up being is that when multiple people hold patents that are similar, you have to get licensing from every patent holder. Well, in this case, the two patent holders were Wayne and Gene. And as anybody knows, Wayne and Gene get along probably like the Hatfields and the McCoys, basically. So we were looking at a monumental task, to say the least. So the first thing we did after Expo is we set out to continue work on NewCore. At the time, we were working on the menu system and working out some pretty major bugs at the time still. At the same time, we pursued other legal avenues. You know, everything we could think of, we had our lawyers looking at every possible thing, you know, we could do with this. And it finally got down to a point where in talking with Gene's lawyer and in talking with Gene, when the rubber met the road and we said, we're ready to work with you, sign a contract saying you'll indemnify us, we're ready to go, they went, can't, sorry. Long and the short of it is, you know, what we've said we could do, we're ending up, we're not going to be able to do. Which kind of left us back at square one after about 9 months of work on the legal issues. So Don and I had talked always about a plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D to this. You know, we were down to plan F by that time. And the last plan that we had was to get licensing from all parties or really not continue with NewCore. That was the choices that we had. And the likelihood of it, you know, based on what we had discussed and based on working with, well, actually only working with Gene, we didn't think it was going to happen at that point in time. So Don and I sat down and we came up with a strategy. And the simple strategy was I would talk to Gene and Don would handle Wayne. So Wayne and I haven't always gotten along really well. We do now. And, you know, Gene's pretty easy to get along with, but we kind of divided and conquered on it. And surprisingly enough, I think we talked to, did we talk to Wayne first or Gene first?
I talked to Wayne first.
Okay. Gotcha. Don actually called up Wayne first. You want to tell him a little bit about?
Yeah. There you go. Wayne, he was pretty good, actually, about it. He had some concerns. You know, he had made up some boards, some Prism cards. They didn't have all the chips on it, but he was like, hey, what's going to happen if we start selling this? I'm not going to be able to make my money. And you know, both guys, Wayne and Gene, claim they have the right to make it, and the other guy doesn't. Williams tends to back up Wayne in this case. They say that he has the right to make Wizard Blocks and Pinball 2000. Gene can produce parts, but he really can't make a new machine. And they were calling NewCore a new machine because it's different than the original. So he was concerned about that kind of stuff. He didn't give me a hard time. He just said, okay, what do you suggest? And I said, well, we thought about going with just you, but then Gene's going to sue us, and you know, he agreed. And so I said, okay, well, would you be willing to, you know, work out some deal with where, you know, Gene gets part of it and you get part of it? And he said, yeah, okay. And it was pretty pretty reasonable.
And it wasn't even the potential, because we believed, and we still believe to this day, that NewCore is probably quite a valid product on its own, and that we may or may not be, we kind of believe we're not, you know, in breach of any patents. But the issue is it's not whether or not you're in breach, it's fighting for what you believe in and the cost involved. And if either of those parties brought a lawsuit against us, to even start defending it, you know, even if we were 100% in the right, it was going to cost us way more money than going the licensing route. So that's the route we decided to go. And I remember talking to Gene about it. Actually, I had Don on the other line, and we brought this up to Gene secondly, as Don said. And I think Gene's first response is, you know, what did Wayne say? And we said, he said yes. And, you know, Gene thought about it, and Gene agreed. And it wasn't quite that simple. You know, we've got them to verbally agree, and then we spent about the next 2 or 3 months to get a contract that we could all agree to. And all of us also means Williams. You know, we wanted to make sure, on advice from our lawyers, that not only did we get the two patent holders, but since Williams had expressed, you know, concerns about certain parts of the project, that we got them involved also. So the four signatures on our agreement are Williams, the Pinball Factory, IPB, and Big Guys Pinball. So at the point that that was all signed, all the players, all the parties involved had basically given us their blessing. And it sounds easy as I say it today, but it was a year worth of work. And it was a year, you know, I tell people that making the emulator was the easy part, that the legal aspects of this that we never expected to handle. And, you know, as we sit here, you know, at our core, we're two geeks and we're two programmers. And fortunately enough, we had the legal muscle behind us because, you know, Don's whole family's lawyers, basically. So it didn't cost us an arm and a leg, and they were the right types of lawyers to properly defend us and, you know, express our interest in this. But once that hurdle was overcome, we were full bore to go ahead with the project. At that point, some new and interesting things started happening. One of the first benefits that we didn't realize is last year we had shown you our ROM board, which we held up the prototype that was mine. And we were going to have to include one of those in every box so that you could take the ROMs, you know, read them in and use them in NewCore. Well, one of the advantages to getting permission from the parties was all of a sudden the ROMs were made publicly available.
So by all people.
By all people. So we reduced the cost of NewCore to all of you by not having to include that ROM reader, not only reducing the cost, but making it much easier to use, because reading those ROMs actually took about 4 or 5 hours, you know, at the rate at which we did it. So that was the first major benefit that we were very happy to see. That was just kind of a start. It was, you know, we had spent the whole time working on NewCore, having people fighting us on it. And then when it changed to all parties were interested in having it succeed, we got a lot of help that we didn't expect, even besides that. And we spent the next few months programming. We started beta testing, I believe, in January, or alpha testing, actually.
November.
Was it November? Wow. Well, that's Eric is one of our alpha testers. He and Scott were actually, Scott and Tony from Great Lakes Marketing were the first three alpha testers. And I first of all, I'll skip forward just a little bit. I've gotten two support calls on NewCore, and they were with setup. One, somebody didn't read the instructions, and the other, somebody just needed some simple guidance. We've had no boards go bad. We've had no problems reported, and we really have to thank our testers for that. We had an extremely long testing cycle for NewCore. We had a about 7-month testing cycle. And we spent a long time because we wanted the product to go out without flaw, you know, being a great product and have a lot of great press behind it and have people be happy. And that doesn't happen without the extreme amount of testing, and it doesn't happen without the loyalty and the stuff these guys went through. Anybody who's installed NewCore today, you can take a disk and you put it in the drive and it automatically installs everything, you know, thanks to a script we wrote. Well, these guys had to suffer through manually installing libraries, manually changing config files. They had to stick through us, you know, through buggy code, and it wasn't like it was today out of the box, you know, but the amount of testing they did, and Scott happens to be, Scott sent me test reports. Well, he works for Ford in that respect. And I get this spreadsheet that looks like it came from I don't know where, and it took me about a half hour to figure out what was going on. This is an industrial quality, you know, report and stress analysis on the machine. And it's stuff like that that really made it the success it is. So I got to thank those guys again for their time and interest in helping us with that. But that kind of brings us to where we are today. Today we actually have a released product. We released the first new core, I think, in late July, the first unit shipped. And we shipped them within the time frame that we said for the price that we said, which I'm very happy about. And then we recently released the new Core Complete about a month ago that is the all-encompassing system for people who don't feel comfortable putting a PC together. And like I said, it's gone very, very well. We suggest that people who build the new Core base unit are computer experts, but you know, some of the people who have put it together have no idea how to use a computer at all and have done very well with it. So that's, I've been extremely happy. The one thing I didn't touch on, and we should go back a little bit, Don, the hardware we use in the new Core system, Don has designed from the ground up, and that's pretty impressive. I'm going to let Don speak about that for a second.
Well, we had many challenges. Originally, Steve, our other partner, actually wanted to do a PCI video card for the to handle the monitor, the existing monitor, and we looked at it, and we were actually thinking about doing it. It would have been quite an undertaking, and we had a few people lined up to help us, but luckily we found that arcade VGA card, and it did everything we needed. What else were we going to do? We had to handle the NVRAM situation. The PC is constantly writing to RAM, so we needed to have that under control. We chose USB in the end just because it would be more standard. We saw PCI going away and PCI Express coming into the picture, and who knows how long that would last, so we decided to stay with USB. The audio board we had a ton of problems with, and noise problems. The original card used the PC power supply. We tried that on ours. There's actually still pads for a connector, but there was so much noise inside the PC and even on the ground that we gave up on that and ended up with an external power supply to solve that. So, I don't know, we've...
Yeah, you know, and Don, I said last year that everybody in this project had their own specialty and we couldn't do it without everybody. Don is a genius behind the hardware. So if you love the hardware, it's Don. If you hate the hardware, it's also Don, but he did a really good job. And like I said, we have not had a single board come back bad yet. Now, we've only had the product out for a couple of months, but... You know, not bad for a guy who works all day in an electronics company and, you know, builds this at night. So he's done a really good job. Going forward, what we're doing currently, we've got new Core available. You know, it's available on Pinball Life. If you go to their party today, you can pick it up there. We've actually arranged with Pinball Life to have a few units here. So we have a couple of complete units to sell, and if somebody gets so desperate, they could take mine, but once the show's over. And we have some base packages. Where we plan to go from today is we're planning on constantly improving the system in different ways. One of the first things we want to address, and we've actually already started on, was Williams had created kind of as an add-on this tournament system that allows you to connect multiple PIN 2000 machines, dump it into a server, and do high scores. Someone in Great Britain actually, and I can't remember his real name, Applejuice is his handle, has set up this server to record scores from around the world. Well, currently with a Pinball 2000 machine, you gotta get a router, you gotta hack the router with custom firmware, you gotta get a network adapter that's no longer made. You've got to go through technical feats that Don and I, being technical people, don't want to go through. So we're going to add that support into new Core, and the only thing technical you'll have to do is plug an Ethernet cable in so that anybody here can connect to any of those tournament servers and save their high scores out to whichever tournament server they decide. And we think it's going to open some new and exciting things. That's first on our list. That was planned from the get-go. Another thing is our USB board has an expansion port on it, as you know, I've talked about many times. And as long as we had to do hardware, which again we had to do for the NVRAM, we wanted to make an expansion that we could add features to. The first feature that we planned from the beginning is a hardware knocker. Don personally can't stand software knockers, and they bother me a little bit, but not that much. But what you'll be able to do is get a little board that'll plug into the new Core USB, hook up the Pinball Life's knocker kit, and you'll have a real physical knocker in your Pinball 2000 machine fairly inexpensively. That's the first thing. The next thing we plan to do is, back towards the end of development, I talked to Bill Ung personally, and we plan to make a mod, a board actually, that hooks in a new core that works with Bill Ung's saucer mod. Because currently his saucer mod is sort of random in the way it flashes the lights around. With our hooks into the software, we can synchronize those spinning lights to the different modes. We can synchronize them in hypno beam mode, for example. The lights still spin now, which is annoying if you've used it and been in hypno mode. We can prevent that. So that'll probably be our next project. And we've got a couple other projects that are kind of in the works, in the idea that, you know, in the idea stage that we haven't, you know, yet ready to reveal. The second feature that we're also going to start working on is a software API to allow us to add software, add features to an existing game. Let's say you have an RFM play field, and you played RFM and you love it like we all do, but you'd like to do something new with it. We plan to write some new modes so you can play a new game on that existing play field. So you don't have to buy a new play field, you just upload the software. And our first game will probably be fairly simple. It'll probably be one mode, if you will, that'll get progressively harder and add new things into. We're going to crawl before we walk, before we run. But later, we plan to use that to even possibly create a Revenge from Mars 2, or, you know, Revenge from Earth, something like that, to where we could write brand new games to support a platform. Which brings up another point that I know I'm going to get questions about, which is what we're going to next. Wizard Blocks is something that everybody brings up with us. And anybody who's talked to Gene said he's making Wizard Blocks, or in the process of doing it. I don't know currently what he's saying, but that's last what I heard. Wayne's planning on making Wizard Blocks. What we hear, again, we're not privy to any inside information other than what we've heard. But the thing about Wizard Blocks is for that to happen, if it does happen, it really requires Nucor from a financial standpoint, from a technology standpoint. And what we would like to do, anybody in this room who's actually played Wizard Blocks knows that it ain't quite done. And that's the massive understatement of the day. I read, you know, the pinball group on the Rec Games Pinball, and people complain about Stern software not being done. Well, if you complain about that, you'd probably vomit once you played Wizard Blocks. So it's not that terribly exciting of a game at this point in time. But there is potential there. There is potential to extend upon it, to make, you know, to finish out the game, to flesh it out, and that's something we really want to be involved in. And actually, going way back, before we even started talking about the Nucor project, Don and I started making phone calls to see what it would take to allow us to finish Wizard Blocks, because that was our first thing that we wanted to tackle. So in a roundabout way, we're kind of coming full circle to one of our goals, which is to try to help that happen. I don't want to promise you it's ever going to happen. If it does, it will use Nucor. You know, both parties have already said that they'll use Nucor for it. And we are on board 100% with trying to do anything we can to make the game really playable for more than just 5 minutes. So,
go ahead. Yeah, well, I was going to say that to make Wizard Blocks happen, there's a couple problems. There's the, you know, missing molds and everything else that they used. There's legal obligations. Wayne has the trademark right now. Gene says he's going to make the playfields without the trademark, maybe change the name. Nobody's got into the tooling. The software, it's questionable who has a source code. Maybe some of the original developers do, but those guys are, you know, they're struggling to find it. So it's going to be interesting, and it might be expensive unless they could sell a lot of them. And when I say a lot, I mean more than 150. I mean, you know, 1,000. So it's going to take quite a bit to actually do Wizard Blocks if they're going to do it at all.
Yeah, it's not a super simple task by any means, and we've actually taken a cursory look. And we had our release party, and one of the things we did is we talked for a few hours with people who came to our release party and said, okay, you know, everybody says they're making Wizard Blocks. What would you pay for it? Well, we just, either we got a good sample set, or we were talking to the cheapest pinball people on the earth, which a couple of them are, you know, who would pay $2,000 for a Wizard Block, said, well, at that price, it won't get made. But it's definitely going to be a monumental task. It's not simple. We've made it simple from the software standpoint. That the thing that would not allow Wizard Blocks to be made, we've overcome. Now it's just simply making the play field, which, again, sounds simple, but is not simple. So
it'd be interesting to see a show of hands, maybe some just numbers taken out of, you know.
Yeah, just, and Gene has said, we already got, well, we know you'd pay anything for it, Craig, but just out of curiosity, Gene has said, I think he's going to make a complete machine, and again, this is what Gene says, or what we've already said, for around $10,000. Who would pay $10,000 for a complete Wizard Blocks machine? Okay, we got Kim, Greg, Mark.
Okay.
The Aussies would, obviously.
And U.S. dollars, not Aussies.
U.S. dollars.
How about five?
Now, if you could... If you could buy a Wizard Blocks kit that consisted of a playfield, a translite, and side art, or maybe not side art, and it was in the price range of $4,000 or $5,000, how many people would be interested in that?
It's a little better.
Yeah, that's kind of what we figured. And quite frankly, if it gets made, we think that's the route it should go. And we're doing our best to try to be voices of reason in some cases and steer everybody who's talking about this in what we believe is the right direction. But it's kind of what we expected, and it's not any surprise. But in the future, too, I mean, Wizard Blocks is obviously the holy grail, but we'd like to see some new play fields made from scratch that we can write new software for. And it's a possibility. With the Pinball 2000 machines, you know, the way Larry and his team designed them, they're a kit. So that you can plop a play field in and have the rest. Well, it's a horrible task making all those cabinets, all the cabinet electronics and everything. What we've done with Nucor and people's existing cabinets, it would be quite simple to make a replacement playfield and add new software to it. So we've done our part, and we hope some people pick up the mantle to carry the playfield end of it, because if they can do the playfield, we can provide the software end. At this point in time, basically, I'd like to open it up to any questions. Please feel free to ask anything, how Nucor is working, more about Nucor, but he wanted to know what, when I said about new games, are there any legal aspects to creating new games? And yes, there are. Some of the legal aspects are, for example, the reason why I mentioned Revenge from Mars, creating new software for that playfield, is Revenge from Mars is a Williams license, or Williams creative license. We wouldn't probably have any success in creating new software for Star Wars, because LucasArts would probably come after us, you know, if we created a new version of Star Wars or even anything using the playfield. So on Williams licenses and Williams IPs, we don't believe there would be any legal issues. It's just, you know, we couldn't do another Indiana Jones, you know, without a license from, again, Lucasfilms, not LucasArts. So I think those are the only legal ramifications. And we've talked to the parties who own the rights, and they are all for this happening. So those would be the only legal blocks as far from a Williams standpoint, and they are excited about doing the same thing.
I have a comment.
Okay. What Rob just asked was, will we make a dev kit available so that, you know, home consumer, well, they'd have to be technical people, obviously, who could program, could write their own games. I'm gonna answer my answer to it, and I'm going to let Don talk. But the first thing we want to do is we've got to create, obviously, this application programming interface, or the dev kit, if you will. Then we will write software directly without releasing that. And there's a couple of reasons for it, and I think Don's going to address them, but that'll be our first step, and I think I'll let Don take it from there.
Okay, yeah, a couple things. There's certainly electrical issues. You know, early on in our development, I wrote something, and I was in a loop, and I had the light bulbs on, full 18 volts, and they all turned chrome top, and they all burned out. So I was like, I wouldn't want to do that to you and have you come back and say, I bought your kit, and you just ruined all my bulbs, or you started a fire in my cabinet. Wayne had something to say about that. He didn't really have a problem with people writing their own games and making them, but he did have a problem with people mass producing them. So there's a guy out there making cabinets now, reproduction cabinets. He's like, what's to stop them from some guy making a cabinet, some guy making play fields, and now competing with me, you know, using my licensing? And, you know, we'll have to work that out. I wouldn't have a problem with somebody having a development kit for themselves. But beyond that, you know, we have the ability to control the machine ourselves. We're not really, in most of the modes, we're letting Williams control it, but we do have a few things like the Pong where we control it and we know what to do. So I think it could happen. It'll take some negotiation.
And again, there is a concern there, Rob, that you hand the keys over to somebody and not everybody is a great programmer, number one, and you know the potential of hurting the machine and even potentially causing a fire, even though we try to prevent it, could occur. So the first step we'll take is before we release it, we will develop on it first. And then we'll see where it goes from there, and there may be licensing considerations that we could, you know, look at that time. I don't like to make promises we can't deliver. And these are goals of ours. I don't want to tell anybody this is happening for sure. This is our direction right now. So is it possible in the future? Yep. Do we plan for it now? We have an interim step before we'd get there. Scott.
Yeah, Chuck.
I'll take your second part of the question and answer it first.
Repeat it, somebody.
First of all, he's asking about wizard blocks. Number one, why do we need the source code or why would we want it? And number two, or have any past designers, in Wizard Block's case would be Pat Lawler, shown any interest or any hesitation in us bringing it forward? First part is I've sent Pat a number of emails, and I hope to see him tomorrow, but we've never talked to Pat directly. So I don't know how Pat feels about it, whether or not he has any feelings, quite frankly, and I'd like to personally ask him. Now, the first part of that is there's two ways that Wizard Block's could be finished. If you have the source code to it, then you can see the direction and how the programmers were implementing the game as it stood currently, and you could continue. Because even though, you know, if you call a gameplay 10, 15, 20% done, whatever percentage you want to assign to it, that's a lot of work getting the initial game running. So that's a, you know, it's a big head start on development. If we start from scratch, we have a lot of time getting to that point that they already were. So, but then again, it may be advantageous to us with what we've done to start code from scratch. So it may not be in the best interest to use the source code and to actually finish the game that way. It might be in the best interest to use our dev kit and finish it in that manner. So at this point in time, again, it's somewhat academic, but Don and I have talked about it and kind of gone back and forth both ways, you know. Would we use a code, or would we start it from scratch? And we don't have a good answer for that yet. Yeah, and that's a good point. He said, you know, Pat may be under contract and not allowed to do anything pinball-related outside of Stern. And I also bring up a point, because Don keeps bringing this up to me. He said, you know, with Wizard Blocks, we'd have to get Pat back on board. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think the playfield design, which was Pat's baby, is pretty much done. I don't know that to the degree of how much Pat was involved in the software side of it. I haven't talked to the programmers that work on Wizard Blocks whether Pat was highly involved in the concept or Pat wasn't involved much at all in the concept. It obviously would be nice to continue that to get Pat's take on where he was going, but not completely necessary.
First, I want to say thank you. The passion you guys have to actually go in and do what you did is just monumental. Not a small job, it's not a giant job, it's a lot bigger than that, and I know you can understand. And for, you know, Pinball 2000 was a really awful dead end, and I own two machines myself, and the fact that on one hand, I know that I'm going to be able to keep these going for a long time, on the other hand, the ability to make them a lot better and have them do more things and have a better screen. On and on, it is really, really exciting. I just think it's amazing, and I think that the maze that you have traversed through in the last 12 months to actually get everybody to join hands and sing happy together It was not likely. That's amazing. And then finally, about providing an SDK for allowing the world to be developed. That's a wonderful concept. And Dan touched on it with all his bulbs going solar. And there are a lot of people who've been at Expo and were presented things where they created their own pinball. And I guarantee you, every last one of them had some dramatic event where stuff blew up, a lot of stuff. We're talking about transistor. We're talking about your driver board. We're talking about solenoids. When one thing starts happening to them, they like to catch fire. And again, it takes literally under 1 second of the software computing properly, all your legs are good. So it's an environment that everyone's developing machines had dramatic stuff happen. And that's kind of the path. I'm not saying don't do it, but again, it's another big hurdle for Nucor and the world to be at peace that we're giving you a bad and you're going to blow something up with it.
But before that, I'd like to say thank you, Larry. It's a massive compliment to hear that from you. But we also have to thank you. I mean, if it weren't for Pinball 2000 and the awesome platform that it is and where you guys wanted to take it, we wouldn't have done this project either. It's something worth saving. It's something worth continuing. So we absolutely appreciate that.
But it wasn't worth anybody's business rational sense to take this out.
It may still be not.
It still may not be worth anybody's rational business sense.
It's just, when you try to run a business, you go, would anybody put this much at risk for this possible benefit and this possible loss? And there's nothing that would make any sense for you guys to do what you did, so we're very grateful.
We're millionaires now.
Well, what's funny is Don came over last night when he got to my house before we started packing up everything, and we went downstairs, and I just picked up a T3 machine and a Getaway, and we walked over the machines, and he laid on my T3, and he said, "I got a problem, Chuck." And I said, "Yeah?" He said, "We're not making any money." And I said, "Well, Don's never owned a business. He's always worked for other businesses, and I have owned a business. It's not uncommon for businesses to be in the hole for the first five years, and actually the way that we've structured Big Guy's Pinball, we've never been in the hole except for our development time, and we've used the money that we've generated to keep the project going, and so we're actually doing very well. But it's funny that you should say that, because we talked about it last night. Don said, I could work at a car wash basically and make more money. But and for anybody who didn't hear that, he suggested that we make the software developer's kit limited, so you had limited access to the machine so that you couldn't fry bulbs, fry solenoids. And I was a chief architect on a project for Kellogg. And one of the things we had to do is we had to create, for all their child properties, a central banking system so when they played games, they could add tokens to the bank, they could withdraw tokens for prizes. They could keep track of scores, keep track of all sorts of stuff. It was a big back end for all their child sites. And we had to write it with the goal in mind so that creative groups, and somebody who hasn't ever programmed or worked in this business, creative groups don't have good programmers generally. You generally have a group of programmers and ad agencies with crappy programmers who are very creative. We had to write this API to the level that creative groups who generally aren't good programmers could access it in Flash and JavaScript and whatever. When you're writing a developer's kit, if you create it to the level that Don and I can write for it, that's 50% of the work. If you extend it to the level of making it foolproof so you won't burn a machine, that's twice the amount of work. So, Larry's going, it's more than twice. To make it foolproof, it's an immense amount of work. So, to have programmers access it, because we know what not to do. We know not to turn that bulb on. We know not to do this for too long. But to add all that code and that logic and to fireproof it, Larry ran the department, and that's essentially what they did. You guys had created, you know, APIs, if you will, with the Apple system. Is it fair to call that an API? And, you know, how fireproof was that, even?
Every developer had explosions.
So, you know, the guys who even did it, you know, had the same issues.
I got a comment on that.
Go ahead.
Every time you try to make something foolproof, somebody goes and builds a better fool. And early on, before Wayne had signed on, I talked to my dad about the very topic that Rob had asked. And I said, well, you know, Wayne's saying that, you know, it might start a fire in somebody's house and they could sue us. And he was like, well, could it start a fire? And I said, yeah, actually, I guess it could. You know, it's not foolproof. And he was like, okay, and how many of these are you going to make? And how much money are you going to make? And how many hours you got into this? And I was like, no, not much. We're kind of doing it for pinball. And, you know, maybe we'll sell 100 units. I don't know. And he was like, why are you doing this? This is dumb.
But anyway, the answer to that is to get to the point where it, what Rob suggested and what you're asking can be done, it's an immense amount of work. Mark? With the parts being found, and anybody who doesn't know Mark, Mark is the guy who bought all of IPB's parts. So this is a guy you want to meet and talk to and be friends with if you want some good parts. But he wants to know, basically, can we get involved to at least run wizard blocks on the current hardware that's available and what's been found? Yes, we can. And we are...
Maybe.
We theoretically can. We are in discussions. There are issues. They're more... Like Larry said, I'll just be very simplistic about this. Getting Wayne and Gene to work together was, you know, akin to alchemy. You know, turning lead into gold. I didn't think it was going to happen. Don had more faith than I did, but we got them to work together once, and we're hoping lightning will strike again. But the thing that they both need to realize is that the solution that Nucor presented is a solution that they both need to embrace for anything they want to do PIN 2000, because it just doesn't apply to Nucor. It applies if Wayne wants to make a wizard blocks, Gene holds patents. If Gene wants to make a wizard blocks, Wayne holds patents. So we have been, similar to the way we have talked about Nucor, we are trying to be, if you will, an emissary between the two. And there is interest, you know, because neither one of them can talk to each other, but both of them will talk to us. So we are doing our best to try to carry that forward.
I don't know that either one of them can do it alone. I just doubt it. I don't think Gene has the source code. I don't think Wayne's made any play fields yet. I don't know for a fact, but...
I just wanted to ask Larry or anybody from Williams, how many, that's what you were going to do, conversion kits at the price point that you had in mind, which I think was around $1,500 to $2,000, how many would you have to have made in order to make the profit? Would you have had to make like 7,000, 5,000?
I can't give you the exact number, but the vision was, and that they were priced so high because when they were looking for a game sale type of profit margin, because we would have this R&D to pay, and you know, if you looked at our balance sheet, it took about 7,000 games, you know, a quarter to pay the bills. Revenge from Mars at that rate, yeah, that's just over even before things turn the other way. I don't know if that is probably
the
quarter might be longer. I'm doing a fireside chat tonight at 8 o'clock, so I can apply it. It's kind of one, and I'll talk about anything anybody wants. It's really your session, but that's kind of one of the areas I wanted to talk about, the whole kit concept. And what I thought about that.
Just to put things in perspective, let's say Pat Lawler signed on. He said, I'll do it for $100,000, and we only get 100 people to sign up. That's guaranteed. It's going to cost at least $1,000, and we don't make any profit. They don't make any profit. That's with no play field, nothing, no tooling.
But, and like you said, the 7,000 units, you know, let's assume the 7,000 units roughly have a $1.4 million cost, you know, a break even. Well, if you're going to do that, then you've got a $1.4 million startup cost. If you make 100 units, you know, you don't pay the whole $1.4 million. You might pay a million of that, but then a million, you know, by 100 units, you know, you can do the math. That's the problem with manufacturing is You know, the first one cost you $100,000 to make, and the next $50,000 cost you a penny. You know, that's the issue.
Anything on a video jukebox being added so that you can run like the Williams promotional videos in the Pinball 2000 and like the movie?
Actually, that is one of our plans, and I started working on that personally. The problem we ran into, and I'll try to make this short, the jukebox code has been rewritten 7 times from scratch, and most recently rewritten 1 week before release from scratch. And it's not because we wrote bad code, it's because MP3 decoders, the actual, you know, the MPEG library, the layer that decodes that audio, which also decodes video, there's a lot of them out there, and they're really poorly written. One of the first things we ran into, and Eric with his Armenian techno was the person to find this, is that the original MP3 decoder we used locked Nucor, locked it cold.
On certain songs.
On certain songs. You know, songs that weren't encoded well, because the MP3 standard is very loose and a lot of encoders don't do a good job. So we have spent a lot of time perfecting the jukebox, and we're pretty sure we've got it to the point now where we're real happy with it. But the video is the next thing to explore. We could certainly do that. Because, you know, one of the things that would be nice is, you know, when you start up the game, to have the Star Wars intro video on the Star Wars game, or to play music videos even if you wanted to. So that is something we can do, and it's something on the books. YouTube.
Yep.
Well, and the funny thing about YouTube, too, and I'd like to tell anybody who wants to buy a Nucor or has bought a Nucor, is one of our people, one of our testers, and I won't reveal which name, and they're not in this room, called me up and said, I'm having problems with the speed of the game. And I said, okay. And he bought a minimum processor by specs. Actually, he bought below the minimum. And I said, okay, well, what are you doing here? What are you doing here? And he said, well, you know, should I turn off the web browser? And I said, turn off the web browser? What the hell are you running a web browser for? And he said, well, I was browsing the web while I was playing new... come on. I said, you've got this to run a pinball machine. You can play other games on it, but please, while you're running the pinball machine, dedicate it to that. Oh, okay. So somebody asked me that the other day. They said, what else can I do with this? I said, well, it's a computer, but while it's in the machine, just have it run the machine. Don't show people how you can run YouTube videos and play a game, because you could do it, but it's not good. And that's always been in my plans. There was a period of time when we were going through the legal battles that each one of us kind of just got completely fed up with the legal aspect of it, because you've never been in through anything until you've been through legal threats in your email and all the ins and outs of working with lawyers. Well, I decided that I had had enough of it, and I decided to write a game. So actually, in everybody's Nucor, there's a breakout game that I wrote in about a week, week and a half. And you use the paddles to play it, and it's a secret key combination that some people know how to get to. But one of the things you could do is you could create a version of MAME. I actually have my own custom compiled version of MAME built the way I wanted to. But you could do the side-scrolling shooters. You could play Galaga on it. Anything that has kind of a right-left, absolutely you could do that. Now, again, I tell everybody, it's Nucor is here to run a pinball machine. But I'm sure we'll see some real creative uses like that. And someday, one of the things I'd plan is writing some extensions to allow people to run outside applications such as that. So, yes, it's possible.
Did you say that you had some machines for sale with the Nucor in it?
Not machines. We have two things. Well, we have three things for sale, actually. We have the Nucor base package, which you have to buy a machine for. And we have the Nucor Complete, which, Eric, do you have one of the cases? Eric was actually kind enough to create custom cases.
They're by the door right there.
Yeah, they're by the door, and he expects us to carry them out, silly guy. But they come, it's a PC with brand new components that comes in that custom case that Eric had built, and it's ready to go, so literally you put it in the machine, and you don't have to configure anything. It's just plug and play.
Do you know of anybody out there that has a Revenge or Star Wars with it already installed for sale?
Nobody's wanted to sell theirs yet. I people have had it such a short period of time, I haven't seen any for sale, although I'd love to see what they go for.
Thank you.
not selling mine, but tell you guys right now, if you have an inkling to get these games, get them now. Because if these systems start showing up on eBay, just realize how small the group is. You know, RGB and Expo. I mean, there's so many people out there that don't know about these. You realize what's going to happen to these games? I mean, we were picking them up for $17.50, and that's how much you were paying for a base Prism card and new computer and everything. These games are going to go through the roof, especially if they come out with a Wizard Block playfield or something else.
Yeah. Well, and that's a very good point. Is I can't wait to see what the first one goes for, sold and pre-configured. But the prices have already started going up. The nice thing is like Eric mentioned, somebody sold a new in stock they bought from IPB, one of the complete, you know, computers that used to go for $2,400 on eBay. Somebody put it on RGP for $600 on eBay actually and didn't sell it. And they had to relist it at $500, and it went for $550. So one of the things that we're really happy about, again, we're just huge proponents of the Pinball 2000. So if you don't want to spend money on Nucor, we're really happy that you can get spare parts cheaper for your existing systems, and a lot of people have. So, and another point to Eric's is we've done no advertising at this point. We wanted to make sure that when we got out there, the platform was stable, that we didn't have any user problems, that we start out slow and just, you know, kind of word of mouth sales. We are going to do advertising, you know, probably after Expo. Yeah, that's one of the guys we'll do it with. But we'll do advertising, and you'll see, you know, people start to realize that, and you won't be able to pick up the $1,000 machines or the cheap ones. So go to your ops right now, see if they have any dead ones laying around, look all around for them, and get them while you can cheap.
The optimal
LCD. Optimal LCD size for a new core is a 22-inch, 22-inch widescreen, 16x9, and they're readily available. Oh, I've noticed a shift to 23-inch screens. The 22-inch screens are about $150.
I got mine from buy.com, I think.
I think I bought mine from Dell.
So 16:9 is actually the optimal aspect ratio.
It is, and the reason it is, and you have to stop by and see my machine, and everybody in here will have a Revenge from Mars in a Star Wars cabinet. It's my personal demo machine that I've gutted and rebuilt 1,000 times on the expo floor, so you can come see all this. I have a 22-inch LCD in there. But if you go, I originally went with a 19-inch LCD, and the original PIN 2000 monitors are 19-inch, but it leaves about a 2.5-inch border on each side of the play field. And the nice thing about a 22-inch is it extends almost the full width of the play field. And the way you warp it, it gives you a better picture, me personally. Some people want to stick with the original monitors, and they can, but you have to see the LCDs to really appreciate it.
Go ahead.
Did you ever talk about the new 120-hertz screens when you put it on 3D goggles?
In order to do that, you have to have control over the 3D images, and number two, Pinball 2000 didn't use real 3D.
But if you make new games, you can...
You could absolutely do that. Sure. That'd be freaky. I'm sorry. Rob?
Your 16x9 aspect, if you change it from 4:3, if you had a 4:3 effect, does it drift any of the virtual targets, any of where it's noticeable?
It does drift them slightly, and again, I encourage everybody to stop by my machine. The thing is the original machine, the targets weren't exactly placed either. I mean, and as much as mine warps it a little bit wider, the original machine warped it in a little bit. So the one thing you have to make sure that when you pick up the 22-inch screen is you get one with an adjustable dot clock or horizontal width. Because you don't use the full 22 inches, you scoot it in just a little bit, and you get really good alignment. And hopefully you'll stop by and see that. Eric.
The original system did not line up with the playfield exactly. When I was testing this thing out, I had my original computer in there with an AV switch box. And I thought it was a new porch, but it wasn't. It was an actual way that the monitor was laid out inside the game itself. It just... When I say not perfect, that means if you've got it centered right in the middle, left and right ramp might not be exactly there, even with the horizontal adjustment. So it's just the way the code was written.
Yep. And either way,
the monitor is different too.
Yeah, the monitor is different. The biggest difference between the LCD and the regular monitor is black level. There's a negative on the LCD side that they have these fluorescent lights behind them that are constantly lighting them, so you see a dull glow in the glass. Just a dull glow that really, quite frankly, doesn't bother me at all. Some of the CRT purists absolutely go, oh, that's horrible, I got to have a CRT. On the other end of it, the LCD has color saturation and color brightness and richness that the monitor couldn't ever have. So there's trade-offs either way, and quite frankly, I think the LCD is stunning, and I'd never change mine. I've got two machines. I've got an original monitor and the LCD side by side, and everybody who looks at it says, absolutely go with the LCD.
What kind of configuration would you recommend for someone that wants a complete kit but also wants to put their own 22-inch LCD in?
If you mean a complete... I'm sorry.
A complete kit is...
Just a computer.
It outputs to a monitor, an arcade monitor.
Arcade or LCD, you choose at the time you buy it. Yeah, correct. Any other questions? Now, I encourage everybody, again, we're going to be here till Sunday. If you'd like to see it in action, please come by and play it. We've got a sign up giving the specifications. Talk to us about it. Ask us any questions. We really encourage you to stop by. One last question. We don't know. We just got here. The traffic was horrible this morning, so we're late. As we understand, the company who's making the EM machines, Pinball, Retro Pinball, I think it was, is not showing up, so we're taking their space, wherever they are. But we'll be on the floor in there. Just you won't be able to miss us. And thanks, everybody. We hope to see you by our machine.